But let's talk to travel expert Peter Greenberg. Always like to hear from you, Peter, because you know all things about travel. You can hear him 3 to 6 on Saturdays here on WGN. Peter, thanks for being on the show.
Not a problem.
So today we heard from Boeing, their annual meeting, and it was quite a dismal outlook for the airline industry. We all knew, no surprise, that it's going to take a little while for people to get up and flying again, but his estimate was 2 to 3 years before we really get back to, you know, where we were.
Well, think about this. Go back to 9/11. We were all afraid to cross a large body of water because of possible terrorism. Now the fear is we're afraid to cross the street. So the odds of us getting on an airplane going anywhere is diminished, and it's compounded by the fact, and I call it the fact because it's going to be inevitable, that not everybody wants us to show up, meaning countries are going to do everything they can to preserve their borders, and they'll do the same thing at state and regional levels. And until we get two things in place, a viable vaccine at scale and a universally recognized so-called immunity card that we can carry with us, like the old days when we used to carry yellow health cards that said we've been properly vaccinated, or in lieu of that vaccine, that we've been properly tested negative for the coronavirus, the liability issues will stop us from being allowed entrance into a lot of countries.
Let's keep on that, because it's hard to envision what every industry is going to look like 6 months, 18 months, 2 years from now. But some of the things you're already seeing in the airline industry, they're boarding the back of the plane first. I'm hearing some are saying that middle seats, they're leaving vacant. I don't know if that's industry-wide. I've heard the suggestions that they take temperatures or require masks to board a plane. I don't even know if you can do that. What do you see?
You can absolutely do that. And in fact, they were doing that after the SARS virus in Hong Kong. So the technology is there to do that. The question is, when are they going to do that? And the chances are they're going to do that before they let you get on the plane. And they'll probably, if you're going to a foreign country or a state that doesn't necessarily recognize another state's stay-at-home orders, they might do that when you land. As far as the middle seat, Delta's already doing that. American is doing that. But it's easy for the airlines to do that now, and they're only flying at 8% load factors, saying they're not going to book any middle seats. The real challenge is going to be, when we come out of this, who's ever going to want to sit in another middle seat? And you may have either a regulation or a mission statement by one airline saying, we're not going to do it. And if they don't do it, you know inevitably that means the average cost of an airline ticket in coach is going to go up between $80 and $300 a ticket. Now, that may work for the folks who fly Delta and United and American, but what about the low-cost carriers, the Spirits, the Frontiers, the Allegiants, even the Southwests, whose business model is predicated on selling every seat on the plane? What are they going to do?
Right.
And that's going to be a real challenge to see who stays in business and who doesn't.
I saw a comment on social media over the weekend. It took a pandemic to figure out we need more space on the middle seat on airplanes. And then I also saw an artist rendering, Wall Street Journal, I think it was, I don't know, about what a middle seat might look like. And there was sort of plexiglass around it, and it was faced in the opposite direction from the other two seats. So you'd be flying backwards.
There are a lot of aircraft now configured that way in business class. British Airways does,
yeah,
and United Airlines does on some of their business class flights. So that's not an unusual situation. The plexiglass is, and even so, that's not 6 feet of separation. That's basically 14 inches. So, look, the jury's out right now, but something's going to have to change, because what we're dealing with here goes way beyond our need to fly or our want to fly. It's our fear, and we need our security blanket, and we need guarantees. Corporations, Fortune 500 corporations, they're not letting their people travel right now because there are no guarantees. Their own people don't want to travel because there are no guarantees. And how about this? Which hotel would let you check in without a guarantee that you're not going to infect everybody else in the hotel? So until we come up with those protocols, we're not going to be moving that quickly overseas or taking long trips.
Remind us again about airline refunds. If they cancel, they have to give you a refund, is what you told us last time. If they don't cancel it, they can offer you a voucher for future travel.
Well, they're desperate to preserve cash, even with the government bailout. So they're not necessarily going to volunteer that you're entitled to a refund, but you are. This applies to every airline operating in the United States or to and from the United States if they're international carriers. So if you're on an international airline flight from Chicago to Paris, you qualify if the airline cancels the flight first. If you cancel the flight first, then you're subject to their rules and regulations and rebooking and penalty fees. But if they cancel it, even if you booked a non-refundable ticket, under DOT rules, you are entitled to a full refund back to the original form of payment.
Okay, that's good to clear up. The other thing I'm hearing, Peter, and I don't know if this is even your area, but I hear people who had group travel plans, schools, graduation plans, trips to D.C., you know, the kinds of things you do in, like, mass, 100 kids go from a school, that they're having difficulty getting any sort of refund in a lot of these cases, or even if they do, you know, they don't get much back.
Well, some of these, and you're right, but some of these cases are going to end up in court because what's happened is, you know, you're booking future travel. Your trip did not commence, but they used your money. And now they in many cases, they might not even have it. Or they don't want to give it up because they need operating capital as well. But that's not your problem. That's their problem. And I'll make you a bet that for those listening to the show, whether they had group travel or their own personal family travel, and the total cost of the travel per person was under $7,500, they've got a perfect case to go to small claims court. And my guess is there'll be very, very few small claims judges who wouldn't want to side with you because chances are they're trying to get a refund. I mean, talk about a conflict of interest, but we're all in this together, right? Well,
yeah.
We're all in this together. So your first line of offense is to dispute the charge on your credit card statement. You contracted for a service or a good you didn't receive. And if that's then denied, head right to court. Just make sure all your documents in order. And as long as they are and you didn't do anything stupid, you have a reasonably good chance of getting a judgment in your favor.
Sounds good. Well, that's stuff to the next phase of all of this, trying to get that through. I mean, you go to court. I mean, it seems as if I'm sure the courts have a lot of cases in front of them right now. But eventually, if you're saying they have a good case, so that's good to hear.
Oh, they do. They do. Listen, we're not in the business of being banks loaning our money to airlines or tour operators for things that we never did.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you, Peter. We always appreciate hearing your expertise on all things travel.